Brooke and I work in the same office, but Brooke helps lead the development, implementation, and evaluation of public health law initiatives at the Network for Public Health Law. Take it away, Brooke.
Thank you. It's nice to see that so many of you stayed because they were saving the best for last.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Please don't fall asleep during this. I'll try to be somewhat quick, all right? All right, so today I'm going to be talking about the findings from the Network for Public Health Law's JDMPH survey. I have no disclosures. And the primary learning objectives today that we're going to cover in this brief overview is to define the educational and professional experiences of individuals with both a JD and an MPH, to compare and contrast the experiences between our study participants who completed a joint degree program versus those who did not, and to discuss opportunities to engage students and professionals in the field of public health law. So why are we even talking about this? So the Network for Public Health Law is really established with a mission to build the field of public health law. Law is not a new tool to address public health issues, but it most certainly has gained increased visibility over the last decade, if not more. We've also been hearing a more vocal interest from individuals who are really interested in working in public health law, and they want to know what that profession looks like. They want to know what their educational strategy should be. Should they go to school for both degrees? Should they do one and then go back for the other later? So we really wanted to figure out, you know, well, what does that look like to be a JD and MPH, and how can we help meet the needs of public health professionals, both by doing some work with academic institutions and also professional organizations and professional development resources. Oops, wrong button. All right. So we decided we'd do a descriptive study to understand the academic and professional experiences of individuals with a JD and MPH, and we developed an online survey using SurveyMonkey, and it had 24 questions that were open and closed-ended. They largely fell in the categories of demographics, education and professional experiences, and satisfaction. We recruited participants via our social media channels and through our biweekly network report, but mostly we worked with our colleagues at our regional centers and at the National Coordinating Center to really help us identify those individuals, and then a number of career services offices at schools across the United States as well. So in order to be eligible to participate in the study, we limited it to those who had a JD and an MPH. Now, this is also a weakness of our study, and I want to acknowledge that. You know, we know that there are a number of people that work in public health law that don't have a JD and MPH. They don't have maybe either. But because we were receiving requests from a number of students who wanted to know what that looks like, and because it was a pretty easy sample for us to identify rather than looking through everyone's resume and saying, oh, is that public health law? I don't know. Having a JD and an MPH was kind of an easy way for us to kind of boil that down. So we received 284 responses, and 211 were included for analysis, and we did some very non-fancy descriptive statistics, and we also did some qualitative analysis for themes from the open-ended questions. So kind of based on the first category, so who has a JD and an MPH? Perhaps not too surprisingly, the vast majority of our study participants were female, and more than half of the participants were between the ages of 20 and 39, with the vast majority falling between 30 and 39. Most of our participants also live in Washington, D.C. and Maryland, and this is probably indicative of where the jobs are. In terms of the academic experiences of individuals with a JD and an MPH, we found that the majority did not complete a joint degree program, almost 70% did not. So that meant that many went back to school at some point in their career. It might have been 1 year after they finished law or public health school, or for some it was many, many years later. And the reasons that they cited this were largely that they felt that going back to obtain that second degree would really enhance their career opportunities, but they also did it out of personal interest. So to us, this was really exciting because we felt like this really displays kind of a personal commitment and passion to the field of public health law. We also just kind of asked schools to kind of see where people are most commonly going based on our small study sample. You know, the number of joint degree programs and schools has grown drastically over the past, I think, since the late since the late 1980s or 1990s, we're now up to, like, I think 48 joint degree programs. But we're not endorsing any of these schools. We're just saying that these are some of the ones our participants are going to. And so what are the professional experiences of individuals with a joint degree? So the majority of them are working in the government setting, closely followed by, and this was kind of surprising to me, but in academic institutions and then nonprofit organizations. I would have thought that it would have been flipped and it would have been nonprofits and academia, but it turns out it was the other way around. I also, in hindsight, wish now that we had broken down government into the various levels, but it would have been interesting to see, you know, how many of our folks are working for local departments or state or federal. But we might kind of be able to intuit that the majority are working for federal government based on the geographies that they revealed in their survey responses. So a lot of people want to know, how much money am I going to make when I'm done with this? So we collected the salary range of those who indicated that they are working full-time. And we know public health law is not really a lucrative career. You're not going to make the kind of money that you make going into a law firm. But, you know, government jobs come with great benefits, too. So we wanted to provide some information about what that kind of salary range looked like. And as you see, you know, a significant chunk of people make between $50,000 and $100,000, very closely followed by those that make more than $100,000. We also did kind of break it down a little bit further to see, do individuals with who completed a joint degree program, so maybe finished the 2 degrees faster than someone who did not, do they make more money? And we found that individuals who did not complete the joint degree program had a higher median salary, but more individuals who did a joint degree program make more than $100,000. So of the kind of work that the majority of people classified their work as, most indicated that they practice law, and that was closely followed by advocacy and policy work. And then lastly, in terms of professional experiences, we looked at bar status by kind of work. Now, we know that going to, you know, take your bar exam, that's something that anybody who goes to law school is going to do. You don't really walk out of law school and say, I'm not going to do that. But we had the data, and so we thought, well, this would be kind of interesting just to see. And we were actually pretty surprised to see that the number of people working in academia and management are a lot less likely to be barred than some of the other kinds of work. All right, so lastly, how satisfied are individuals with a JD and MPH, both professionally, personally, and financially? You'll see that, you know, generally satisfaction levels were pretty high, personal satisfaction and professional satisfaction in particular. Personal stayed pretty steady throughout the years, but professional had a slight incline between the ages of 60 and 69. And then financial satisfaction was lower than both. Perhaps maybe they didn't take that sweet job at the law firm. But there seems to be a, you know, pretty drastic dip there between the age groups of 60 to 69 and 70 plus. Now, we did only have 3 individuals who reported their age who were 70 or older too. So, you know, this is a small sample. So, but, you know, perhaps they retired and then were upset with how much money they had left in their account from their non-law firm job. So, you know, with the network's mission to build the field of law, you know, we really wanted to identify some themes for, you know, what can we do to make the field stronger and to help professionals, new, experienced, or individuals who are thinking about the field. And so we were able to identify these 3 themes: connect, develop, and financial assistance. Connections. People really indicated a desire for having dedicated job boards that were very specific to public health law and having increased networking opportunities. You know, they really wanted a chance to know who else out there has a JD and an MPH or classifies themselves as someone who works in public health law. They wanted to have that space to communicate with each other and to share ideas and talk about challenges and successes. They also want more development opportunities, more continuing education that's tailored to public health law and fellowships and internships. And to that end, you know, the public health or the network for public health law has a visiting attorney fellowship program and the scholars in residence, and you know, we work really hard to kind of provide informal continuing education through our webinar series, in which we work very closely with many of our partners at Public Health Law Research and APHA and other organizations. And then lastly, financial assistance. Individuals really indicated a need for having scholarships and loan repayment programs that are specific to the field of public health law. So just in closing, you know, as law continues to be prioritized as a tool to address public health, we really feel like this is kind of an opportune time to assess the who, what, where, when, and why and how of this, and to use that as the impetus for the development of programs and resources that can be supportive of them. So I'd just like to acknowledge the following organizations that were instrumental in helping us distribute our survey, and then also to my colleague Katie Schmitter, who's sitting back there, wave, with the data analysis, and then also our colleague Mary Uran with that as well, and she's not here. So if you have any questions, please feel free to contact us. There are a few handouts on the back table, and then we are also sponsoring a reception, the Public Health Systems Data Pep Rally. I don't know what it is. It goes from 6:30 to 8, so please feel free to join us there this evening, all right? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And again, thank you both to Cynthia and Brooke for your flexibility and collegiality in accommodating our colleagues who needed to catch their flights. But we do certainly want to allow some time for Q&A with our final two speakers. And so if you two want to come forward.
Anyway, I was interested, how can I get a copy of that study on the ambulance transports?
Give me your card. It is in circulation. It was published in circulation, but I'll have to send you the link. Yes. And it was August. It was published August 4th or 5th, something like that. I should remember because we did a lot of work building up to
it. Also include tribal reservation?
In Colorado, there are no tribal casinos, but that is an issue, you know. There are those differentiations in other states. Yes.
Other questions?
Yeah. I guess I'm wondering, for the dual degrees in JD and PH, did you classify, if they're in health policy or epidemiology or environmental health, because there's such a broad area of master's degrees?
Yes, you're reminding me that I forgot a part of my presentation. So, you know, for the... We did not classify, and that would have been another really great thing to do in hindsight. So I'm going to put that in the back of my mind. But for the purpose of this study, we defined MPH as anyone who had obtained a graduate degree from a school of public health. So it could have been a master's of health administration. It could have been a master's of science of public health and epidemiology or whatnot. And not everyone, you know, there might have been a few people that wrote in, you know, kind of what their concentration was, but I can't remember offhand. But it most certainly wouldn't be enough to kind of draw any conclusions from. So, thank you.
Yeah, in the back.
Yes. Actually, there is a wealth of information out there, and I'm going to tell you to go to our website. It's not just our information, though. We try to be a portal, if you will, and there's links to other states that have done exceptionally good jobs. There was a wonderful presentation earlier from Maine. I know that Oregon's done some wonderful things. Good things are happening in Minnesota. California communities have been passing laws that are requiring smoke-free multi-unit housing. So if you go to NO, as in N-O, -smoke.org and just type in housing, you'll get to our smoke-free housing page and hopefully be able to find everything from tips, tools, and then links to other programs. Or we can also talk offline here because there's a lot of information out there. Not a lot of laws, but a lot of policies, and there's a lot of other information online.
I have a question about the JDFAH survey, which I actually took, but don't
Yeah.
When you, in the area of practice of law, did you identify what areas people were practicing in, or did you just presume that if they were practicing in public health law, and I asked in part because I had a stint at a law firm that I was doing construction law, it had nothing to do with my JD.
Yeah, we offered those categories, but then we had other, and a lot of people wrote in comments, or they would check a box and then write something in the other line as well. So there was a lot of classification that we kind of had to do as well. But we did ask that, you know, professionals that took it, were individuals who were working in the field at the time or, you know, had recently, so...
All right, well again, thank you to Cynthia and Brooke and to Naima and Angie and Jen and Aaron, and to all of you. I know it was a little bit unorthodox, but you hung in there, and I think we had some really good information and some good dialogue in the Q&A session, so thank you. And as Brooke mentioned, there is a pep rally for the Learning Health System that the network is sponsoring later this evening. Thank you.